using what's called a G3 network, and I'm curious what that is. Is that like a Wi-Fi that you use for the internet, or what is a G3 network? And pardon my ignorance, I'm sure everybody on Facebook knows what it is, but I don't. KTORIW, WBTCU.
Okay, Mel, I don't know if he's got a cell phone. I do not own a cell phone. I'm a dinosaur. My car has other kinds of radios. I can communicate when I drive. And so, to my knowledge, G3 means third generation. G2 is second generation. G4, when it comes about, will be fourth generation. So as they make improvements to the circuitry of the thing that's in your hand, the circuitry that's at the cell site itself, the methods of modulation, demodulation, vocoding and whatever, I think in many cases, and here I'm going to pass it over to the people who really own cell phones to correct me, I think third generation really means what functions your particular cell phone has when you purchased it, and if you purchased the right contract with the cell phone supplier. Some of these guys have got message handling and instant messaging and cameras and tape recorders and all kinds of funny things. That little chunk of electronics in your pocket these days is getting more and more elaborate. So I think 3G, G3 is third generation. Now, you guys can all pile on me and correct me for all the errors I just made. Give me your call letters and name right now. KQLIW in the tech man.
WS2N.
All recognized. Anyone else? Just one. Maybe I wasn't that bad. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay, if the show Jeopardy is right, you're correct, Dick. About maybe 2 months ago, that was one of the questions. What does this G3 mean in relation to the phones? And whoever was got it right, third generation. Just like you said, there was generation 1, 2, and now they're up to 3. Thank you, Dick.
GQ2, QIQ.
Gordon, and Gordon, while you're giving us information, QIQ, writing you down here because I'm so darn forgetful, do you know what really happened between the second generation and the third generation, and is there a fourth? I mean, what did we get with the third? We're paying more money for it. What are we getting for our money? Oh, you, Gordon. Gordon, you got it. Gordon number two, QIQ.
Oh, good evening, Dick. It's Glenn, by the way. G3 is the new service. It's the latest generation service being offered on the iPhone and on BlackBerry. There's two phones that I know of right now that, that you can actually get that service in. It's really the latest thing that they've been offering is the keypads now. Basically, instead of having the keypads on the bottom of all the buttons, now basically you can touch screen, and that's the latest advancement. And I think they're charging quite a bit more money now for the new iPhones with all the digital media that you can download from the internet directly and have touch screen control. Back over to you, Dick.
That was a double. One at a time. Who was that?
I'm back. Two, tango, tango, tango.
Okay. Gordon is back. Glenn just gave us some information, and Eric is back. Okay. I don't know who I should go to first. Eric first. Go ahead, if you've got a comment. I've got a whole series of questions for you. Then I'm going to go to Gordon, and then in that order. Go ahead, Eric.
Why don't you continue onwards and then ask me what you want to ask?
Will do. Gordon, TTT, you got it.
Okay. Among other things, the 3G networks are offering higher bandwidth data services, and as such, can be more palatable to people who are, particularly taking their home broadband on the road. This point in my life, if I was a single person, I don't really care much for television, whether it's off the air or cable or even Fios, I would give great consideration to just using my 3G modem on my laptop or a router with a cell modem plugged into it. For $60 a month, I have I pay less. But for $60 a month, you have unlimited data, and you can get better than DSL bit rates. Instead of having 100 kilobits of downlink, you can get up to a couple of megabits, depending on conditions and where you are. And I regularly in my laptop, so it's up there. But you look up HS DCA and HS UPS, give you some insight to the funky 3G that are out there on the data side as well.
Go ahead, Dick.
Wow. Okay, fair amount of dropouts there, but I think I got the gist of what you're getting. Third generation cell phone, you're hooking up your laptop modem to the cell phone in some manner, if I understand you correctly, and you're getting as much as 1 or 2 megs of downlink data rate over a cell phone network into a laptop computer, if I understand you correctly. I'm going to ask you for a repeat on that one, Gordon. I'm amazed that a cell phone can handle that kind of data rate. I am guessing that you do pay a significant premium to get that capability. So, once again, is your cell phone giving you mobile downlink data into your laptop computer? Or is it going somehow with a PCMCIA RF card plugged into the laptop, but it's the same server as your G3 cell phone? W2, Tango, 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 K2LIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, Dick, the answer to that is either way. I can plug in a USB connection to my laptop, and then what's called from the USB connection into a cell phone, or I can plug in a PC card, you know, PCMCIA card. I have both. My laptop has its own phone number. I have no voice plan on it. I chose not to, to have a data-only plan, and it's $60 a month, unlimited data, and in my case, since I'm an employee of a major carrier, I get a 18% discount, you know, basically I pay $60 a month in round numbers for unlimited data.
Fantastic, Lynn, and you, Alex recognized, Gordon, did you say 50 or 60? 50 or 60 dollars per month is the premium you pay for 1 or 2 megs of downlink capability, either into your cell phone or into your laptop, which has a different cell phone number. Run that by again. W2TTT, K2LIW.
Myself as a modem, if I want, with a USB cable. I just choose to use a separate device, Dick. You would pay 60, I pay 50 because I get a discount because I'm an employee of a major carrier. The cream saver does our folks.
Okay, a little bit of an explanation. I'm listening to Gordon on the input frequency. At the same time, I'm listening to him with my other earphone on the output frequency. Whatever fades he has through the machine, the fades that I get through him directly are different fades. So I'm getting 100% copy. Alex, N2NNU, go right ahead with your question, K2LIW.
Last thing, look up HSDPA, HSDPA or HSUPA. Look up those things on the web and you'll see what we're talking about. Okay, Alex.
Dick? Alex, you got it?
Okay. I guess the service is called UMTS. There are UMTS phones out there that do this service. In fact, every large major city, even the small cities in Europe, have UMTS, a wireless data link. You are able to buy a little stick, USB stick, to plug it in into your laptop. You can suddenly get 10 megabits of data out of it. Very nice and very cheap. Well, very cheap is relative. $5 and, €5, 24 hours if you work without a plan. €24 per month if you work for a 1 year plan. So the service is called UMTS, and it does have a contender to that is called Edge. That is actually also a telephone like that, but I Well, I'm surprised to see it here in the States. I would buy tomorrow a new MTS telephone if there is service here in Yonkers.
Oh, boy. I think this RF plus computers is going to catch on. I see a future in this. Wow. You ain't seen nothing yet. And, okay, I think there was a third person who had a question that I haven't handled yet. Have I forgotten somebody on this subject? K2RIW listening? Okay, here you go. Eric recognized, and Bill asked the original question. Eric, go right ahead with your comment. K2EJ, K2RIW.
Now, one thing that folks don't realize is that when they're using the digital cell phone, digital, and there's different kinds of modems and different frequencies which they operate on. There's what we call 3G and Edge network. All of these different cell phones are IP-based devices. Basically, they transmit Ethernet. So if you look on, like, your BlackBerry, you dig into the settings on a lot of your cell phones, you'll see the IP addresses that are actually... Usually the 10.100, which is for that particular system, if you know the way 802.11 is set up, there are certain IP addresses that are not part of the public switch network that are assigned, for example, like when you use your little router at home, you'll find it's at 192.168.2.1, or it'll be 192.168. There are some other IP addresses that are set aside for large networks like 10.100. There's a bunch of them. And they're used internally for the particular provider. But like the 800 megahertz Nextel, and you can plug a USB cable into the phone itself and tap into the data there. It would be a very small rate. It would probably only be about anywhere from 10 to 40 kilobits. You get on a 3G network, and you pay for it with a USB stick or a PCMCIA card. Depending upon what you want to pay, you can get stuff that goes up to like 500, 600, not quite a megabit, but it really starts to get up there. So just remember that really what you're talking to is not really a phone. It's a computer that has audio data embedded in it.
How do I get charged for this, Eric? Is it pay-as-I-go? Is it a pay-per-view? Or do I pay a fixed number of dollars per month for a fixed number of kilohertz or megahertz of bandwidth? Over to you, Eric.
So I'm not going to be a spokesperson for the phone company, but there are various different plans. You get a PCMCIA card from Sprint, from AT&T. You're usually paying something within something comparable to your DSL. Usually it's a little bit more expensive. I've seen them go as low as like $35 a month, $60-$70 a month, depending upon what kind of service you want.
WB2IKT. Okay, WB2I. KT, it sounds like India, Tango, and Glenn, in that order, right? India, Kilo, Tango. If I got it correct, correct me and give me your name and then proceed with your question. My name is Dick.
Yeah, Dick, you have to call for it. This is Bravo 2. I keep trying. My name is George. And just a comment on some of the cell phone plans for the 3G phone. An awful lot of them are going to the number of gigabytes per month download. And if you go above a limit, they'll cap you or charge you an exorbitant rate if you exceed it. Usually they're looking at something like 5 or 6 gigabits per month of download. And what they're trying to do is to flush out people who use it excessively and download all the time, sort of disrupt the service for people that use it on a more normal basis.
Sounds like you've been using it for some time, George. How long have you been using it? How much data do you download? Do you do it while you're driving with your automobile and your laptop alongside of you is collecting all this valuable data and you know what you're going to do for the rest of the day? Give us a couple of hints as to how it makes your life better, George. WB2, India, Kilo, Tango. I keep trying. K2LIW. K2, real Indian woman. You got it, George.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. Actually, believe it or not, I don't have one, but I do work with the company's cell phone plans and I help them out for... with cell phones and looking at contracts and, the technologies involved and how it works. Right now we're involved in some of the Sprint WiMAX trials in the Baltimore area. So, I could comment on some of the stuff that won't be here for a while. But basically, it's the cell phone companies are changing. They used to backhaul via the PSTN, and they're changing. They're changing it to backhauling via the internet. And as a result, the service offerings and a lot of stuff that's under the covers, stuff that we've been doing in corporate networks for years.
Let me ask a really silly question. I should know. Sprint WiMAX, IMAX trials that are going on in Baltimore. What does WiMAX stand for, George? Go ahead.
Worldwide Microwave Access. Basically, they use a combination of licensed and unlicensed technology. Obviously, cell phone people are licensed. But WiMAX is a, basically, it's a standard. It's IEEE 802.16. They can pick a flavor. It has A through E, and it works on the frequency range bands anywhere from 2 gigahertz to 66 gigahertz, both licensed portions and unlicensed portions. ABC and D are for fixed stations. WiMAX 802.16E is for mobile.
Wow. Ain't seen nothing yet. This stuff's going to just keep rolling. Glenn, KT2QIQ, go right ahead.
Yes, Dick, just to answer your one question really quick, the data plans, which are the high-speed internet over your telephone, typically are around $40 additional for the data plan. Like right now with my iPhone, it's typically like around $50 or $49 for the phone portion of it and text messaging as part of that part of the phone. And then you have the data part of it, which covers the internet and downloads the music and everything else onto the iPhone. And altogether, the whole package, on a monthly charge, it's getting a little steep now. It's about $105 a month. And that's kind of like with AT&T. Back over to you, Dick.
Yeah, but that's for a 3G iPhone.
Yes, it is.
Boy, the number of dollars that are flowing through these services. Hey, Bill, look what you caused. Look what you created with this question, Bill. But if you see UK, I hope you got some of the answers you're looking for. I don't know about you, but I got a little more than I was looking for. So did you see UK? K2LIW.
Okay, Dick, WDQC UK, a plethora of explanations, and I guess it was pretty much what I thought. I wonder what the first generation of phone was. Were those big Motorola's that sat up and you could stand them up? They were about 8-9 inches tall, an inch and a half square. That must have been the first generation. I remember those. All right, Dick, I'll let you carry on with the digital TV. I have the Fios, which I'm very happy with. Technically, I'm happy with it. Beautiful picture. The internet is great, and the phone is great, but their billing is kaflooey. I get a different bill every month, and I'm not supposed to, but they usually rectify that over the phone. But as far as the cell phone, I got a T-Mobile, which I haven't even paid in 3 months, and I haven't used it, so I'm going to drop that and get one of these pay-as-you-go type deals. I don't even use it. I think the last time I used it, I stopped 9/11 with it on a highway. So, I'll let you get carrying on and see how the Giants are failing. They're failing here in their attempt to win. So, I'm going to take care of the wife, too. We'll catch you all later. Don't forget to see you guys. I'm one here on the radio. Good discussion, Dick. Back to you.
Hey, Dick, I got another one for you for radio. Who said you got another one for me?
That's Gordon, W2TTT.
Hey, you sound a lot better. What'd you do, get home? And go right ahead with your information, Gordon.
Do you know what happens when you're on the Palisades Parkway as opposed to driving up toward it? Or 9W. Yeah, I'm on 9W with a drive to the Palisades Parkway up on top of the Palisades. Qualcomm has a service offering that they sell to both Verizon and AT&T, and they brand it under their own deal with a mix of proprietary channels and also common channels, where they reformed the upper UHF channels into multi-hundred kilobit digital streams for direct broadcast there as well to your cell phone, so you can watch NBC and ABC, etc., on your handheld device. And they get, depending on what the channel density is, 3 to 5 channels out of what had been one former UHF TV channel.
Which strikes me a little bit similar to maybe some of the digital techniques that
Eric has been telling us about, where as long as the picture is not moving too fast, he can put about 3 television channels simultaneously in a 6 meg bandwidth. I'm going to be passing it over to Eric for a couple more words on that. And Eric, also, you take a guy like Rich N2EO, who just loves pan adapters. Is there any advantage in him hooking up the pan adapter to the IF strip of his ordinary analog television, if he was using an ordinary analog television with a digital converter up front? No, let me backtrack this. Let's take a modern-day television set. He taps into a digital television set, first IF or second IF, with a pan adapter, and he's going to see the spectrum that looks like a Bart's head. In other words, it's a flat top haircut, so to speak, of noise. With 300 and some odd KC from the low end, you see this pilot signal. Would he gain any information of any use to look at that pan adapter of the IF strip of the television set while he's aiming the antenna? I suspect the answer is no. He may be able to see something that's equivalent to signal-to-noise ratio of the pilot, but other than that, because of the fantastic digital procedure going on there, I think the eye looking at a spectrum analyzer of the IF strip is not going to see anything it can make any sense out of. That's a guess on my part, and maybe there really is something there. KE2EJ, KQLIW.
KQLIW, KE2EJ. Okay. If you're looking at the observatory, yeah, it'd probably be worthwhile because you can see where maximum signal is. You can also tell linearity if you have a real spectrum analyzer. I don't know about the pan adapter, whether it's really going to display something flat across 6 megahertz. You know, we're not talking about the sideband signal. It's, you know, a couple of kilohertz wide. So it's a different game. If you have a spectrum analyzer, it's definitely a great tool for tuning your antenna with. You make it as flat as you can and as high as you can, to put it in plain English. But that really doesn't tell you about multipath, you know? Because it is a signal that is, you know, a broadband, it looks like noise, it's broadband noise across 6 megahertz. So any reflections that are going on there, you can't see it unless you decode it, unless you have some kind of a synchronous decoder. So the pan adapter idea is it's a nice concept. If it's capable of handling 6 or 12 or 14 megahertz, it's worthwhile, but I kind of doubt that. I don't usually make that, you know, that's just entire segments of the HF band, and that's between broadcasting and 80 meters. I don't know too many pan adapters that were designed to do that kind of a broad spread. What was your other question, Dick?
Dick, you might want to look at a eye pattern or a constellation pattern out of the device in order to tune it properly.
Yeah, the eye pattern or the constellation pattern, of course, would be valuable stuff, which I think is part of the trellis demodulation. Glenn, KCQQIU, go ahead.
Yeah, I think to answer Rich's question really simply is he's not going to see anything because really the pan adapter is too slow. And I believe also when you look at the IF, it's going to be so bandwidth limited by that time, you may not see anything. I think what Eric said initially, looking as close back to the RF section, you know, by the RF amplifier as close as possible, and use something with some really good bandwidth and high speed.
I personally took a spectrum analyzer one day while I was in a laboratory in Levittown, and just with a simple hunk of wire connected to the front end of a pre-amplifier that went into the spectrum analyzer, I just looked at all the UHF channels. I could easily see which ones were Bart's head, digital versus analog. And when I tuned to any one of them with a good spectrum analyzer, where I've got now complete adaptability, I can change the resolution bandwidth, the scan width, the scan rate, scan width in particular, dispersion I guess they usually call it. I can scan, you know, 1 meg per box, 10 meg per box, 100 megs per box, so to speak. I noticed that the pilot signal, which is what Discrete Noli, I think, said in one of his recent lectures, that when you go to a more and more narrow resolution bandwidth, you can easily resolve the pilot tone. But, of course, you're scanning much more slowly when you do that because the laws of physics are such with a non-ubiquitous spectrum analyzer, an ordinary scanning-type spectrum analyzer. there's a square little relationship between the res bandwidth and the rate at which you can scan across that signal without impulse responding to the signal filters of your spectrum analyzer itself. So there's a trade-off. A narrow filter allows you to easily resolve the pilot tone, but you're now getting a very slow update rate. I guess my next question to you, Eric, is that I'm getting the impression rapidly that the degree of difficulty of generating a modern-day digital signal, when you go out and buy a respected brand name for your broadcast station, no problem. But we amateurs, if we decide to start using these digital techniques for our amateur television transmission, I have the impression it's almost out of the question, with one possible exception. There may be some very smart company coming down the pike 5 years from now that will sell us a chipset that does all this wonderful stuff for us. You plug the video in one end, out comes the RF out of the other end, you put it into an amplifier into the antenna. But if I wanted to tinker at home and build the hardware to do modern-day digital television transmission as an amateur television fast-scan enthusiast, or maybe even a slow-scan enthusiast, I have the impression that the degree of difficulty may not be worth it for what we... May not be worth it for what we amateurs are thinking. That's a guess on my part, and you might have an opinion on that one, Eric. KE2EJ, K2LAW in the TechNet.
This is K2K, where I can ask the question.
Mel, we're going to get you right after Eric. Go ahead, Eric.
I think those chipsets exist now.
Guys, well, let me tell you, I told you about this repeater that I'm building, and it has all modes, including 8BSB. There's a 4-chip set that generates 8BSB. The price has come way down. That's the easy part. Making the 8BSB is not a big deal anymore. If you're going to use a ATSC receiver, that gets to be, that's where the complications come in. Actually, there's a group in Ohio that has a digital ATV repeater, and that's not based on the 8BSB system. It's based on, actually, QPSK. It's what we use in satellite communication. You can buy cheap satellite receivers for, like, $150, $200. They actually do what we call BBB. And there's a group of guys in Germany that took a couple Altera chips and programmed them to be a MPEG encoder and also an elementary stream multiplexer. Right? You can buy that from them for, I think, $300 or $400. I forget what it is. But basically, you can stick video into that. It'll turn it into digital video. It'll turn it into a stream that will go into a transmitter that's at 1.2 gigs. By the way, the satellite receiver inputs are between 900 and 1300. So it actually fits in there. So the guy that wants to see it doesn't have to go out and spend a whole lot of money. To do the 8BSB is a lot more complicated, not in terms of transmitting 8BSB, that's gotten very easy, but to create the stream that the receiver will decode. That's where the difficulty is. Oh, plus the fact that the repeater that I'm making will also take IP data and transmit it as QPSK, and actually I think what I'm probably going to do is finish this other project that I have that takes uses a video card in your computer, and I take that output and turn it into UDP, and I haven't quite decided which form of modulation, which is what I'm going to be one of the experiments, because I have a couple of different kinds of modulation.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel. We only lost the last 5 seconds in which he said that's the easiest way that the amateur could do it. Wow. Okay. Those guys in the Kings County Radio Club are a pretty progressive group. I'm half afraid that Mel is going to tell us, they've already done this. They've been doing it for a couple of years. K2KEY, K2LAW. Go ahead, Mel.
Can you send any comments?
Alex, after Mel. Mel first.
Okay. This is K2KEY. No.
What I was going to ask, you made a statement about, you know, indicators with digital television and all. Let's go back to ancient television, back to the 40s. You remember a number of the TV sets that they came out that had a green eye, a tuning eye on there, because some of them had the rotary tuner called Mallory input tuner, such as Dumont. And I remember that green eye. You would tune that until you see the green eye close. Now what happened after that, when they came out with start with stereo, they had a button to push for you tune the station for what you thought it was like, and then you push the button, and if the green eye closed, it was in multiplex, it was a stereo station, an indicator, and you adjust it again, touch the tuning up a little bit to close the eye as much as possible. You mean to tell me there is no way that you can take this green eye and adopt it to something today for tuning, Dick, over?
Okay. First of all, you called it the Mallory tuner. It was called the Mallory induct tuner. I know because when I first cut my teeth in the engineering world in 1964, there was a project going on in my company. It had a crazy number. I think it was called the 1625 project or something like that. It was to build a receiver that covered some crazy span like 300 to 400 megacycles, 3 megacycles to 400 megacycles, a state-of-the-art low-noise receiver. It had NuVistor low-noise triode amplifiers, 6CW4, no, NuVistor, whatever a good NuVistor tube was, in this induct tuner for this very broadband receiver that had very low noise figure, covered all those frequencies, and had every mode of demodulation you could think of. That green eye tuner was really giving you an AGC indication. I think they used it on FM radios as well as AM radios. Some of the early radios had this little green eye tuner where the iris would close, so to speak. An ordinary Dawson Val movement of a meter would do that for you, but the meter's not as fast. The nice thing about the green eye tuner is as fast as you can move electrons against that phosphor screen. It was an exciting thing to look at. And so when it comes to the automatic gain control of the front end of a modern digital receiver, yes. Could you also take the bit error rate, convert that into an analog voltage, and put that into a green eye tuner? I think the answer is yes, but I wonder if you would gain enough to do that, because it takes you a certain delay time to determine bit error rate. You don't really need speed. The advantage of that green eye tuner is it was fast. It's as fast as an oscilloscope in theory, whereas a meter movement is very slow. It's got a lot of lag to it. I think the combination of being attractive and fast is the reason why that existed in those days. Let's see if Eric agrees or disagrees with what I just said. KE2EJ, KQRIW.
Those dollars fall in goodie boxes.
All right, Dick. The Magic Eye, Chicago Web Corps, remember that name? They used to use that as the audio indicator. It was very versatile, too. I still have a bunch of them. Actually, it's far easier today to draw a magic eye in the Anker memory and have it display on a CRT. Yeah, you could do that. I mean, there's no point. But in the old days, like in the Philco set, that was actually the discriminator, believe it or not, not the ADC. That was when you were tuned on. It was in the days before AFT and AFC. The first FM stereo devices, actually, they didn't use a magic eye. They used it was an EL-87, EL-97. It looked like a small 9-pin tube, except that it had a phosphorus front on it. That would fit through the panel. It would mount horizontally. The two bars would come together, and that would indicate when the 19 kilohertz phase lock loop was locked. So you could tune your FM radio, you get those two green things to come together, and you were in the right spot. Actually, there are devices that where you can actually come up with the bit error rate very quickly. As I said, it depended upon the manufacturer you were talking about, and I remember the other question that you had asked me, is that how many channels can you stuff in a DTV channel? Well, there's been experiments done. We've actually put 12 channels in a 6 megahertz spot, but you have to realize that there's a standard definition channel. Most of them were LSP
some of them were, a good number of them were fixed images that didn't move or only updated occasionally. But for the most part, most of the broadcasters, if they're doing one HD channel, they'll usually do a maximum of two SD channels along with it. In the case of the public television or a school system television, they might put four channels, like New Jersey Network runs four SD channels. The way we get away with that is we use something called statistical multiplexing. We'll analyze each picture for motion or anything that needs greater bandwidth, and we'll take bandwidth away from another channel that doesn't need it at that moment and keep all that stuff within 6 megahertz. K2RW, K2, yes.
Boy, what a balancing act that is. If you've got four channels going simultaneously and every so often one of them speeds up in the data rate of its video being displayed, another slows down. That electronics is keeping six balls in the air at once. What a juggling act. Getting back to a question that Gordon asked earlier, before I go over to Alex, Gordon asked a question about the lip-syncing problem, and you told us that occasionally you should flip away from the channel you're on and then come back, as if there's more than one way your receiver can lock up. I had the impression that the lack of lip-syncing in many cases is a lack of synchronization within your own receiver. So is there a mode that it can get into where all of a sudden the audio is extra delayed or extra advanced, and if I tune away to another channel and then come back, hopefully it'll catch the right way, and now everything will be lip-synced? Is that sort of what you were saying earlier, Eric, KE2EJ, K2LIW?
Yeah, that's sort of what I was saying, Dick. Well, let me explain. It's like in your DVD. Basically, you're transmitting a stream. Okay, in that stream is, if you want to think of it as IP data, if you're familiar with how the Ethernet cable works, it's similar to that. There's a header. The header says that, this next 188 bytes of data happens to be video. Then come along another header, and it might say, okay, this is audio. There's 188 bytes of audio. And depending upon how it happened, the next 188 bytes of audio may be right after it, and then there might be channel guide information, and then there might be another header, and there's emergency broadcast information. There's actually a bit that we put in there called the 9/11 bit, and that has the EAS stuff, or the emergency action, emergency alert system information is in there. And it takes time to process these chunks of data to build them up in memory inside the receiver, and the propagation delay or the latency from the time you receive the actual bit to the time your eyeballs see it might be as much as 3 or 4 seconds. And the audio is handled separately from the video, and the video is handled separately from the guide, and they're all separate bits of stuff, and it all has to be managed by the housekeeping computer in there. And if you've ever had to reboot your computer, you can think of the same thing. K2RW, K2J.
If each packet consists of 188 bytes of transmitted data, but the packet itself, I think in many cases, has 255 bytes of data, the difference is 67 bytes. Is that 67 bytes the Reed Solomon or the forward error correcting or the Viterbi encoding correcting? What is the extra 67 bytes? Is that the overhead you're speaking of? Back to you, Eric.
You are now considering the RF portion. Okay, so if you're looking at, if you're counting symbols, okay, because the symbols are an exact representation of the final demodulated stuff, plus the intelligence that was added to do the trellis, which happened to take care of the over-the-air part of errors, because don't forget it's been randomized and shuffled. And you're also counting at that point the Viterbi, which helps put it back together as you decode it. And you're also counting the Reed Solomon, which is actually Reed Solomon is in the elementary part. It's really considered inside the 188 bytes. Strip away the trellis and the Viterbi, then you're left with a header. And the header is, 28 bytes long, and then the rest of it's data.
Question? Okay, Eric first, and then
then we'll get a question after that. Alex, I'm sorry about that. N2NNU, go right ahead, Alex.
Thank you, Dick. Well, there is a proposition here for the net. It seems that more and more we have to work with those fancy digital systems and digital radios and whatnot, and many of us do not know what a DSP and FPGA and all that good stuff means. Why don't we make a net dedicated to digital signal processing, something that will give a focused direction on it? Somebody that might not know what a fast Fourier transform is can come and ask about it, or something like that. So the proposition is to have a different net, a technical net, but very focused on digital signal processing. Back to you, Dick.
Okay. I wonder if you happen to know a guy named Alex who would be willing to pick up that responsibility. Over to you, Alex.
I'm afraid I don't know enough about this to be a mentor. I can get you in trouble with some questions, if that's true. But I think you need somebody more qualified than me, somebody that works in this domain on a daily basis.
Okay. I just thought I could talk you into it. Let's see, what did I do wrong here? Oh, I see what I did. Put in the wrong website twice in a row. That'll stop the poor machine from working. Boy, am I having trouble with my my computer here tonight. It's going real slow. Yeah, me too. I'm spread pretty thin. This is TechNet number 1,219. They probably average 3 hours long each. They've been going on for 26 years. From one point of view, I could say, I think I've paid my dues. I'm not volunteering for anything more. I'm running a consulting business, and I'm already booked solid, so I can't do it. But it's a good suggestion. We're into a very heavy chunk of technology here. The degree of difficulty of understanding it all is significant. The benefit of understanding it is tremendous. The capability it has is just out of sight. Yeah, but Bill told us earlier, WB2CUK, he's a bit unhappy that his ordinary analog television that worked beautiful for all these years, for the last 50-some-odd years, 60 years, it's worked beautifully. Now we're mucking around with it, and we're going to make people unhappy. And I know where he's coming from. There's another group of people saying that, this is third generation, fourth generation, fifth generation television. This is the way of the future. Just look at all the television channels you can pack in. Look at all the resolution you can get on the screen. Yeah, you got these growing pains as we get used to this. Go ahead, Eric.
You can listen to all that stuff. It's all about money. It's not about technology. It's not about the new stuff. What it was about is the last generation of politicians discovered that they could sell spectrum space. And that's what it's all about. Okay, they're moving to a method where they don't have to have the space between the channels. We used to have these white spaces because of adjacent channel problems. So you couldn't have two. You couldn't have a channel 30 and a channel 31 next to each other. The sound carrier will bang into the picture carrier the next guy. And the whole concept is this chunk of space, 700 megahertz, being put there for first responders. And yet, they have yet to get their act together and find some method of transmission that the police department can talk to the fire department, and that the fire department can talk to the ambulance people with the same kind of radio system. But yet, you'll find out that the police department doesn't want the fire department to be able to talk to them, and the fire department doesn't want the police department to be able to talk to them. So there's a whole political game going on here. And then when the United States citizens can't watch TV anymore, and there's enough of them, maybe something will change. Oh, by the way, they're also keeping the concept of keeping an analog transmitter around in case of tornadoes and hurricanes and stuff like that. Back to you, Dick.
Now, look, out who's making the money. Sony, Philips, Magnavox, and all of those. I'm just curious how much money they pushed into the White House, into the lobby for the digital system.
Yeah, I have to go back to that previous statement, though. I was going to answer both of them for it. Are you guys going to keep an analog transmission and transmitter in hot standby? Maybe, but at least in standby. Will there be an analog transmitter ready to go on the air 1, 2, 3 years from now at each major broadcast center? Is that what you're saying, Eric? Go ahead.
Who's going to receive it then?
Well, there's some folks in Congress that are kind of nervous, you know, because of all the screaming that's going on, because the way that most people in the Midwest and that part of the Southwest get their information is via TV. And if they can't pick up nothing, they're in deep trouble. So there's some people thinking about it.
Eric recognized, but once most of us all switch over to digital capability and we abandon analog, and just like somebody asked earlier, if during an emergency analog television transmission takes place, will there be anybody around capable of receiving it? You have to reconfigure your set back to the old way. For the person who's using a digital converter in front of an analog set, he's going to have to bypass the digital converter. Some of them don't have that capability. So do we really gain anything by keeping the analog around 6 months after we flip over to digital and we get 95% of the bugs worked out of it? Over to you, Eric.
Okay, well, keep a couple things in mind. First of all, most of the tuners now are having a bypass switch included because of the problem of you got a VCR, it makes analog. You don't want to go through the digital box, you don't want to see your VCR. And not for another 3 years do the low-power TV stations have to go digital. So not everybody's going digital. It's still going to be analog there. It won't be the majors, it'll be the little guys, the low-power folks. And there's quite a few of them around. So they stay analog for another 3 years. Also, the manufacturers that manufacture digital receivers, television sets, or display devices with tuners in them, they will still continue to receive NTSC.
Wow. You said another mouthful there. I'm going to get to Glenn in a second, and that is, there's still low-power TV stations around for the next 3 years. In the New York City metropolitan area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, southwestern Connecticut, northeastern New Jersey, and southern New York, and western Long Island. In that New York City metro area, roughly how many low-power TV stations exist right now, Eric? Go ahead.
Well, I don't remember what the count was. I think it's something like 12 or 14 or 16, something like that. Wagner has, he owns with like 6 or 7 of them. He's got them all over the country, not just New York. You know, he's the kind of guy that says to the FCC, I want a license on Channel 6 just so that he could transmit audio you could pick up on your car, FM receiver. And he actually did it. Like, I have another friend up in Alaska who, he built his station completely out of used stuff, and the FCC absolutely hates him.
360-degree rotation. If I became a television DXer with a good antenna on the top of that tower, a good low-noise preamplifier, aiming around the New York City area, would I be able to pick up most of those low-power TV stations, in your opinion, Eric Brad?
You betcha. You might not understand what's coming out on it. For example, on my tower, we've got a Channel 26 transmitter, which is low-power, and it's, that one put together by the Koreans, but it's got Korean stuff on it, it's got religious stuff on it. Not something I turn to.
I will invite you in my place, Dick, right across the Armstrong Tower. You'll be amazed what's there.
By the Armstrong Tower, you talking about Alpine, New Jersey, Alex Baird?
Roger.
By the way, when I go to QRZ.com and into NNU, I see this beautiful photograph of what looks like a hotel at a seaside resort. Is that your home in Yonkers?
Yes, I have to put some explanation in there. No, it's not my home in Yonkers. Some people ask me that if that is my residence, but it's not. This is a picture of my hometown, Constanza, on already former king summer retreat. It's a big building, 200 rooms of one note, a casino. It's called a casino now, although the local people are calling it a sarcophag because it looks like a sarcophag. Right across it, built in into the valley, there's the largest delfinarium in the Black Sea, on the Black Sea coast. Very nice place to have a stroll. No, it's not my residence, and it's not in Yonkers.
A Yankee Oscar 4 Charlie Alpha was located how many miles from that location?
Miles? Probably mile and a half or something like that.
I should have asked kilometers. In other words, your residence there was possibly in that photograph?
Way to the left, but you can't see it, yeah, unfortunately.
Fantastic. Okay. Glenn, KTQQIQ. Glenn, you had to wait this. I'm sorry you had to wait this long. Go ahead, Glenn.
Just as well, Dick. Actually, all I have is a little tidbit to add here. That the best little receiver right now that I've been able to test out of all these so far, the Zenith, the Motorola, the Samsung, everything so far, is this little USB device plugged onto your computer. It's called a WinTV HVR 950. This thing is unbelievable. You plug it into any USB port on your laptop, your home computer with USB connection, and you can output to your network the NTSC analog TV, the ATSC digital TV, anything off cables you want to feed into it, it'll modulate that. Software comes with it, and it's made by a little company right here in Hophog. Actually, the name of the company is called Hophog USA. Can't beat this thing for like $99. You can buy it on the web. And if you're a DXer, this is the cat in the owl. It's so sensitive, and it receives everything. Back over to you, Dick. KC2QIQ.
One of those, and I'm pretty happy with it. There is a little program called VLC. You run VLC with it, and you don't need a TV anymore.
Okay, Alex. Glenn, you called that Hophog something. Is that the Hophog computer work?
It's just called Hophog. As a matter of fact, its website is www.hophog.com. That's it. And look on there and look for WinTV HVR 950Q. And this little device is the cat's meow. I mean, it'll fit in the palm of your hand. It comes with everything programmable. If you're analog, you're digital, you can decode cable with it. This thing's beautiful. I mean, especially if you want to do DXing, this beats all the other boxes that you're going to put on the top of your TV set. And because now you're pulling it through your computer, you can put it up on your network. And once it's on your network, you can definitely get full DVI HDTV through your TV set in the perfect format without all the other problems. It's unbelievable. You have to try it. It's a little great little unit.
How did you find out about that is question number one. Roughly how many dollars does it cost?
To answer backwards, it's $99, you know, plus there's some little handling fees and other things, but it's basically a little 99 plus tax because it's local here. The other thing is that how I found out about it was I was trying to build with some Xerox processors and everything else, trying to build my own little decoder for offline, taking an RF little amplifier, putting it in. And I was having some results, but you know, getting all the correct algorithms and everything was just a real bear. And then I had one of my interns come over to me and say, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm trying to decode digital TV." And he says, "Well, here's a little device. It's like $100. And it does what you're doing 10 times better, and the software's already written." Back over to you, KC2QIQ.
Just a matter of finding what already exists. But what smart amateurs do is if it exists, they buy it. If it doesn't exist, they build it. Once in a while, you get an amateur who will build something he can buy, and rarely does he come out ahead doing that. I mean, right now from Southeast Asia, you buy an 80 through 10 meter single sideband 100 watt transceiver, and you can probably buy used with a 1 or 2 week salary, brand new, a little bit more than that. To build something like that, it's going to take you 1 or 2 man years. And rarely would you be able to build it better than buying something that's been around for 5 years and you're buying serial number 1,521. And hopefully by then, there are 4 production runs downrange and they've got all the bugs out of it. So
that you can possibly buy it in many times you're ahead of the game. A really prudent amateur makes a mixture of things he can buy with things he can't buy that he's got to build, and he cobbles it all together. Hopefully he irons all the bugs out of it, interfacing bugs. Alrighty. Have I forgotten anybody? So if so, give me your call letters right now. K2LIW in the Tech Magic.
K2JJ.
K2JJ. Hey, Doug. Those guys in Yonkers, they are something else.
Go right ahead.
Alrighty, Doug, and we'll say good evening to my neighbor, Alex, across the river. Dick, I was just wondering if anybody else has noticed the amateurradio.tv website has been down for about a week now. I wonder if anybody has any information on that. I really enjoy that website to pick up the rest of the TechNet that I usually have to go to bed before the end, so really kind of missed last week's net. I wonder if anybody, I think it's Mike Perry, wonder if anybody has any info on that.
I can tell that Mike is doing a lot of revamping of that particular website, and maybe that's part of what's going on. It's a guess on my part. I wasn't aware that it's down, but I haven't used it in the last week and a half. Anybody else have any information on that? Give me your call letters right now.
Cliff the River, Doug.
Okay, I think you're asking what are we talking about, Alex. If you go to www.amateurradio.tangovictor. Not .com, not .net, .tangovictor. Amateur radio, two words run together, and there's a double R. Amateur ends in an R, and radio begins with an R. You go to that website, and you can download the W2 Tango 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 TechNet in New Jersey. You can download the K2LIW and K2KEY website from Limark. You can download all the past programs for years, and many of them are documented. There are technical schools in New Jersey where the professors are telling their students to listen to some of this material to get an introduction to wireless technology. So that's what we're talking about. You can listen to the past TechNet. I think there's also a way that you can dial into a particular email address and listen to the TechNet live. Let's see if Eric can correct me on that one, something I've never done. But is there a way that a person could hear the TechNet live if he wanted to, even though he doesn't live in the area? KE2EJ, K2LIW.
Yeah, K2LIW, K2J. You go to amateurradio.tv right now. It says website is currently unavailable. Please check the messages in your control panel. Or you just, you know, it obviously wasn't on itself. It's not there at the moment. I do understand you go to the Limark website. There is a somebody's got friends around the country. You're welcome to sign in. That's for sure.
Yeah, my buddy in Texas knows about this and hasn't done it yet. And he listens to the TechNet each week by going to Mike Perry's site and downloading it into his iPod or whatever. And as he's doing his work, walking around his property, he's a consultant, also an insultant, as I call them. He listens to the TechNet, calls me up and says, I disagree with what you said here and here and so on. But he has never signed it to an IRLP node at 9126 and appeared live. One of these days he will. You just wait and see. I just egged him on. Hopefully he'll hear this message tomorrow or the next day when he downloads it and listens to it. Assume that the amateurradio.tv website comes back online. Hey, with any other further questions or comments about all that has occurred, give me your call letters right now. K2LIW in the TechNet.
W2CT.
Go right ahead, Glenn. Correction, Gordon.
Excuse me, yeah, and that friend in Texas also calls people in New Jersey to find out how his buddy is in the hospital. I'll point that out. I'm sure I'm having the nerves to find out if everything was okay. So you can just call him with that. And, let's see. Then, The other, my other question was regarding the frames of